Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
I'm your host, Sabine M. And in today's episode, I'm actually not speaking with a CRE expert, but with my colleague, Claire Jones. Claire is our talent acquisition specialist at Locati. Hi, everyone. Another exciting episode or recording for me because I'm with my colleague, Claire Jones. She's very much in the know around employee experience topics. And as we've touched upon this in so many conversations, heard about the great resignation and the mystery of employee behaviors, I figured let's bring her in and talk about all these things. So really glad you could take the time, Claire. Let's start right away with a bit about what's your professional background and which industries have you worked before Locati?
Sure. So excited to be on here. Thank you. So my background, I began my career, I guess, in HR admin, then moved to recruitment admin for a very traditional company in the UK, Cambridge University Press. I then moved to Sydney. I did recruitment agency side in the FMCG industry. I then moved back to London and worked in edtech, so selling language training to multinational organizations. And then I found myself in Zurich, and this is the first time I've kind of moved into the corporate real estate industry and prop tech. And so, yeah, I manage recruitment here.
So then you just said this is first time for you in the prop tech industry, and I'm guessing the corporate real estate world as well. Did you know about it before you started? And how did you then go about understanding this new world?
I feel slightly embarrassed saying this, but no, I did not have any understanding or knowledge about the corporate real estate industry, corporate real estate managers. I guess as a talent acquisition specialist, I work in job titles if I'm searching on LinkedIn. It's not a title that I was exposed to, but I was exposed to working with office managers and facilities managers, and it was mainly around capacity planning or cost per desk. Yeah, I think I underestimated the industry big time. But how did I learn about the industry? Well, Workplace Leader podcast, big time. But also interviewing. I mean, I interview a lot of people now who work as corporate real estate consultants. And that's so helpful for me because I just gain an understanding of their background, their pain points, and then why they would use something like us, Locati Analytics. So, yeah.
So in that process of getting to know the industry, were there any big learnings or surprises for you?
I think it's the fact that corporate real estate managers are having to deal with so much unknown territory. Like, how do you go about planning in a time like this, in the pandemic? What I've really enjoyed, though, is the evolution of HR in the world of corporate real estate. You know, and working in a talent acquisition sphere, all I've been managing is understanding what makes people tick, what do they strive for, and what are they looking for in terms of working atmosphere and culture. So I've kind of been involved in the industry a little bit, but then I've really enjoyed how HR managers can now collaborate with corporate real estate managers more so, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, I do see that you're working with our office manager, Mariel, a lot on these topics as well. So in the small world, we're also doing the same things, basically.
Big time. And I mean, Marielle, she launched this initiative in the office. We have QR codes located around the office. And so you can kind of, employees have the opportunity to give feedback on how they're enjoying the space in the office and also, yeah, what potentially is missing. And then Marielle and I can catch up and be like, okay, you know, maybe we need to adjust or change things to boost engagement. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question now for everyone, right? Why are people coming in? What are they liking about the office? What are they missing about the office? From all the recruitment conversations you're having and you're exchanging with peers in the industry as well, what would you say are the drivers for employee experience and engagement?
Such a good question, because I mean, my previous role, I worked in a company and there were 50,000 employees. I'm now in a company where we are 67. And the responses haven't really changed. It's always been pretty consistent in terms of what are people looking for. For me, people are looking for three things: a sense of purpose, company culture, like in a working environment where they have a sense of belonging, where they can thrive, and flexibility. And I guess I would kind of put well-being under that bucket in terms of benefits and just a company where well-being is prioritized, for sure. But that actually you're living and breathing it and not just putting it on a job ad saying we prioritize well-being. What I find so shocking, the fact that we've had to go through a pandemic in order for companies' leadership teams to realize, oh, now we should be a little bit more flexible in terms of how we support our employees. And I think the fact, working for Locati, that was kind of in their bread and butter since they started in 2014. So for me, it made sense, me joining a company like Locati too.
Yeah. Now, what you said was purpose, culture, flexibility. I didn't hear the office in that. So how much does the workplace play a part?
I would put the working environment and workspace underneath the company culture bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, how much does the workplace play a part? I would say it depends on the culture and market. I mean, I've never had so many conversations nowadays about what are people looking for in terms of the workplace. And the ball is in their court now, because I literally go into a recruitment scenario and I say, and I'm quite an informal recruiter, but the main question for me is to understand, what are you looking for? What do you value? And they'll want flexibility, and then they'll kind of want to do work, eyes down work at home, and then they'll come in if they want to do eyes up work and collaborate and team building exercises. But one thing that I'm also conscious about is the rise of startups, because obviously Locati is a startup and we're having more startups kind of starting out that offer purely remote positions. So that's competition from a talent acquisition perspective for me, because I'm thinking, okay, we offer flexible working because we do see some value of people coming into the office and connecting and belonging. And we've got such an international cohort as well. So people kind of move to Zurich and we are their network, their fellow employees. So that's really important for us. But I'm conflicted because I can see the competition that purely remote startups bring. It's difficult for us to kind of, yeah, compete. But then, I don't know, are they also offering a more kind of diverse and inclusive offering by being purely remote? Or are we not? So I'm conflicted here.
Yeah, I think it boils a bit down to personal preference. I've had that conversation before with someone where I said, I think companies who don't offer flexibility and who don't offer remote work, they will not find employees anymore. And that person said, there's still going to be people who actually value like stability and having that place to go to and having the routines and stuff. It's kind of a, I don't want to bring the generational divide up again, because that's like been discussed and it's all kinds of stereotypes putting out there. But that being that kind of nomad worker is becoming more normal, but there will still be people who like that signpost of going into the office. So is this something that you see actually in the conversations you're having, that there is a difference between generations?
Sometimes. I mean, when having one-on-ones with our employees, everyone has a different answer. And so I have, of course, I need to take that into account. It is a little bit more difficult from my side, because I feel like I'm having to, of course, we have to cater for people from different shapes of life, and that's fine. But we really have to be mindful of that, especially if we want to really prioritize diversity and inclusion, which we've got to. It's a major priority for us. For me, for example, I love the separation between the office and the home. I love the commute. I can kind of, it helps me set the tone for the day. But one thing that I'm very conscious of are our younger employees. Say this is your first job and you start your first job online. How do you learn to be professional? Like, how do you learn to write your first email or conduct your first meeting? And I have this conversation a lot with a lot of my peers and friends, and, you know, we kind of bounce off each other. And a lot of people will say, well, I learned by watching other people's mistakes in physical meetings. So I'm really conscious that when recruiting, yeah, people, and this might be their first job, that they might need some more support. Rather than someone who's got a career and been working for 10, 15 years, they might not necessarily need to come into the office. They kind of know how to interact with people, and they've got their career backing to kind of support them in place. But then also they might have children as well that they need to look after. So God, do not feel like you need to come into the office all the time. So there is a mix with in terms of generations, for sure.
Yeah, just heard an interesting point yesterday at a seminar as well, where they said it's kind of not fair to the younger generations to not give them the same field to learn on. Exactly what you said, like seeing behaviors from others and seeing others' mistakes. Because if you're remote, you just get like snapshots of behaviors in meetings. You don't see like real life. You don't see someone swearing while they're doing something, which it does happen, right? Or being like happy about something good happening. You don't get the full spectrum of what is work life seen from kind of, or as an outside perspective. You just have your own perspective in it. Now, you touched upon that it's been more, or it is more difficult to recruit talent when you're competing to companies who offer fully remote for someone who wants to be fully remote. I think especially in the where we are, software development tech world, that's probably a point. Do you see other points where it's become more difficult to recruit with the arrival of hybrid work, or has it actually become easier?
It's more efficient to coordinate interviews.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a dream, being able to do that. It's made me so much quicker. And I'll offer the candidate the choice, you know, do you want to do this all virtually? And then maybe you could come in for a coffee catch up at the end of the process, just so you kind of get to see the office and potential fellow colleagues. So it is more efficient. What I just find so funny is I feel like we've been speaking about the war for talent for years. This is not a new phenomenon. And I'm almost kind of over it, because I think it's just employees just need to make sure that they are attractive and that they are offering flexible working, I don't know, benefits. And I do find it shocking that some companies are not adapting so quickly. Or because if I find out from a recruitment perspective, if I find out that a company is not shifting to a hybrid working model, that's a target company for me to go and poach all of their top talent. So it is more difficult. I mean, again, I mentioned the ball is in the candidate's court now, for sure. Just adapt. Hey, I am conscious also, we do work in a startup. We can be flexible. It's easy. We don't need to kind of unhinge a load of different layers of structure. We can be flexible.
Yeah. What are employees then mostly looking for when they're hunting for a new job?
Depends on the role. I mean, I definitely have candidates asking me about the whole host of benefits that we offer in call one. Normally that would kind of come at the end of the recruitment process, right? You get an offer and here are our benefits. But we're definitely kind of jumping on that whole benefit topic at the beginning, which is fine. And actually it allows... I love this more kind of informal, real human approach to recruitment. I've said it before. What are you looking for? And if we can't provide what you're looking for, then maybe we're not a fit. But actually, you'll then give me a lot of context and ideas for me to kind of perhaps sit down with the HR team and be like, okay, this is something that's been coming up a lot in the interviews when I've been speaking with candidates. Should we review our benefits?
It is a relationship that you have with your employer as well, right? And as in private life, you make a decision with who you want to be because you get to spend a lot of time together. So it should be a fit.
What is it that we spend also 80% of our time like indoors? So again, if you decide that you want to spend that time in the office, it should be an enjoyable experience. And kind of touching on the benefits, I've spoken about this with fellow recruiters in the industry as well. It's so funny also, people love food, people love coffee. It can sometimes go down to small things like, you know, people really loving having nice soap in the bathrooms, or like having a vending machine with a whole host of like fruits or headphones or something. It's just quite strange what can come out of these conversations when you ask people what they want. But I think for us, because diversity inclusion is on my agenda big time. It's kind of more important issues that we want to cater for. Like, how can we ensure that our business ties in with your routine and life?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we said before that a lot of people now having the opportunity do like the option of being remote. Do you at the same time see talent mobility increase as well?
Like, think about the expat communities. When the pandemic hit, people then review their whole kind of life situation and they're thinking, okay, do I need to return home because I now need to be close to my family and loved ones? So will my company support me? If not, I'll probably jump ship. I think duty of care kind of trumps rigid company policies in that sense. So HR teams have to improvise to cater for a wider population and for their employees. Again, there's a bigger emphasis now on not where work is done, but how work is done. But it's difficult to coordinate. So yes, talent mobility has increased, but God, I really don't want to be in the tax team managing that.
That would have actually been my next question. What are the limitations of flexible working?
Oh my God, I don't want to be in that tax nor finance team at all. They will have such a critical role in shaping remote work policy now. And it is more difficult to track employees. I think we, as a benefit, actually, pre-pandemic, we offered all of our employees the ability to work from anywhere for up to 2 weeks in a year. But like, when the pandemic hit, we then said, hey, look, we've widened that. We know that we've got lots of employees who are not from Switzerland. We can be a little bit more flexible now. But then you kind of have to trust your employees also from a tax perspective to make sure they come back into the country whereby they're employed. So yeah, tracking your employees and tax, that is a minefield.
How do employees feel about dress code nowadays?
I think this is such a funny question. I reckon if we did a poll pre-pandemic, I reckon people would put an emphasis and value on adhering to some form of dress code. Whereas now, that's not a priority. It depends what type of company and what your company culture is and also what country you're living in. For us, I keep on talking about diversity and inclusion, but we really do have a flexible approach to dress code. So, you know, women don't feel they need to wear heels, or perhaps, you know, people who have a disability or people from different religions do not feel they need to adhere to any restrictive dress codes. And I wonder whether that's going to play an impact on perhaps people who have worked in traditional banking, insurance, pharmaceutical industries. I imagine that would be more difficult for them to rock up in joggers to the lab. So I don't know whether it's going to play a huge part in terms of people considering a job move, but perhaps.
Yeah, it's like, I used to have a colleague who said she actually liked putting on that, even in home office, she would put on nice clothes, like even kind of more formal clothes, because it helped her getting into her working persona and get into the mood of doing things. And I have to say, I've never worked in my sweatpants. I always get like regular stuff on. I mean, I'm the same, like on the weekend, you won't find me in sweatpants. It's just only if I'm sick. But at the same time, I find it very peculiar. Just read a report as well with like suggestions what to do to bring people back to the office or to make hybrid work for you and to like level out, because what we're seeing as well, right? Today's Friday. I mean, today we were a couple of people. We had a farewell for a colleague, but I think the other Fridays were like three or four people in the office. And there is definitely a drop on Friday. So the suggestion in that paper was to allow for a more cash dress code on Friday. It was like, you know, if people want to be cash, they'll just be at home in their sweatpants if that's what they like. So they won't come to the office because you have like a casual Friday now.
But isn't that, casual Fridays has been going on for ages. I kind of almost, yeah, it's casual Fridays, standard.
Yeah, well, it's not revolutionary, yes, but apparently in some industries, you still wear certain attire. So it might be a relief. And then there's another topic that I want to say is old, which is employee well-being. And you've said it before as one of the elements that shape employee experience. Now, I wonder, are organizations actually doing enough or the right things when it comes to well-being of their staff?
I'm not convinced. Again, in my world, I spend a lot of time looking and reading through job ads, right? And how do different companies position themselves and what are their benefits and how do they prioritize well-being? But then it's difficult when you see perhaps a cool competitor from an employer branding perspective put up a video on Instagram of their employees going on a run and then eating fruit. Is it like Instagram versus reality? Like, what actually is happening in your organization? And so we've been thinking about this a lot, actually. We have a team called the Ever Better Team, and they are essentially a group of employees from different departments that come together internally, and they're the voice of the employee. And they kind of unpick how Locati does things from an employee well-being perspective. So what the Ever Better team has asked our HR department is, how do we coach our people managers? How do our people managers know to tell their direct reports to prioritize well-being? But who holds the responsibility here? Is it HR? Is it the people managers? Is it the leadership team to encourage the fact that we should be prioritizing well-being? And I think it's small things for us. Do you feel comfortable enough with your manager to discuss whether you're having a day where you're not feeling so perky? And I think managers really need to lead by example. I remember in my first job ever, the head of HR, she would always take her lunch break. So everyone took their lunch break. And that was so important. And she would also encourage walking meetings. And so it was just such a positive and healthy leadership style that was instilled in the team. And so this is what we're really trying to evaluate. Like, okay, should the responsibility trickle down from the top? And also, a fellow colleague also mentioned to me recently that she embraces flexible working. So she might see that it's sunny outside at 3 o'clock. So she might go out for a run, but then she'll make sure on her email reply, the auto email reply states, if I'm replying to you at 8 p.m. in the evening, please don't feel like you need to reply. It's because I do flexible working.
That's so clever.
Small things like that, I just think go a long way. But I think, again, are employers doing enough when it comes to well-being? I think you should just ask your employees. Again, I know that we can. There's 67 of us. It's easy. But if you're not hearing from your employees, how are you ever going to change or acknowledge the fact that you're not prioritizing well-being so much? We run an engagement survey every 2 quarters. And for us, you know, the insights that come out of that, sometimes we're a bit like, we didn't realize that this was a problem here. Now we need to address it. And I find it really strange when companies don't run engagement surveys, because I just think, are you living in a blissful world where you think everything's fine, but you're actually not listening to your employees?
You're probably still living in an old world where you think the employees are your paid resource and you bought their time and they're there to work for you. So that's the end of the story.
But this is, again, why I'm so passionate about my job, because I think, yes, I worked in agency recruitment and I'm glad I did it, but I really hate the notion where people are treated like a commodity. I hate that. I think it's awful and an awful approach. And again, it bows down to why my first question I ask anyone is, what do you value in life? And does that marry up also to our core values in Locati?
I do know that you're supporting the Bring Women Back to Work initiative as well. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So when I joined Locati, I'm obviously fed by so many different articles about talent acquisition and how do you diversify your sources of recruitment. We can't be lazy recruiters, whereby you're just reactive to the market and relying on people to apply to the jobs that you push out and advertise. Yes, it's great if your employer branding is fantastic, but you can't just solely rely on people applying, inbound people applying. So I was very conscious that I wanted to look for alternative sources of talent. in the Swiss market. And I'm very passionate about the Bring Women Back to Work scheme. So I'm originally from the UK. And when I moved to Switzerland, I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to say this, but I found the Swiss social structure not necessarily so supportive when it came to women in the workplace. A lot of women, yes, perhaps actually you can apply this to anywhere. Not many women are applying to leadership positions. And I'm finding that when I am pushing out a vacancy, I just get loads of men. And I'm like, right, I need to diversify our talent pool. So Bring Women Back to Work, long story short, it's an initiative started by Salesforce. So Salesforce started the initiative in Switzerland. It's run by a lovely lady called Vanessa. She's fantastic. And what they do is they upskill women who perhaps have had a break in employment. Perhaps they've just had a baby or been looking after a sick family member, or perhaps just moved here and followed their partner. So Salesforce will upskill them if they want to kind of re-enter the job market, but with new tech skills. And so then I am then fed every quarter with 18 resumes of these women that Salesforce have upskilled. And it's fantastic because also you just think, okay, you know, you're ready to kind of come back to the workplace. And but it saddens me the fact that they had to kind of go down an initiative like that. But at least it can be a bit of a bridge and provide them with more confidence. And so, yeah, it diversifies my talent pool. Corinne, who was on the podcast before, she is in an organization called Girls in Tech. They're an international organization, but she runs and supports the team here as well. And then we're going to collaborate together. We're actually in conversation about creating an event and hosting an event here in Locati, because again, that will bring a whole host of female talent who are interested in the tech industry. And again, we're going to invite them into our workplace, which again just highlights how important it is that your workplace is cool and attractive to potential talent. So I'm very excited about that too.
Yeah, which very nicely leads me to my last question for today. You can be like, whoo, done. If you could magically solve any workplace experience problem, what would it be?
From an HR perspective, I would love to see something that showed me correlations between productivity, engagement, and workspace. That's what I'd love to see. Where are you happy, and why has the place that you've chosen to work made you happy?
I like how you say, I'd like something. I mean, that's what magical wishes are for, right? You don't need to figure it out. They're going to be like...
Exactly.
There it is. Claire, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being so open.
I'm very open. I hope that's okay.
I think our audience will be able to handle it. So thank you very much. I'll catch you later.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on data readiness in CRE, along with the opportunity to assess your organization's workplace insight score. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.